TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg. All sports.
How you doing?
All the time. A division of Bell Media.
That puck took off and caught Crosby in the face and lifted right off his skates.
Kunin sets up Jerome McKinley, who gets his first goal in a Penguin uniform. Get that dog off my lawn.
4-2 the final. The Rangers win it.
Looked like we were slow. We know we control our destiny.
And the Winnipeg Jets have now dropped 4 in a row.
The big plays, the big stories, the biggest news from across the hockey landscape. This is NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things NHL. TSN 1290.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live at www.tsn1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Richard Pollock, the hardest working man in showbiz today, of course.
I was just asking Richie if he's been out of the studio today, and he's been on from 12 to 6, and he's going to go 12 to 8.
11:30.
But who's counting, right?
There's been some drinks in there.
But who's counting? Exactly. Yeah. Anyways, you can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. 2 hours where we will wrap up coverage of today's 2013 NHL trade deadline. We are going to go, as only we can, division by division, team by team, starting next segment. Let's start off this segment by discussing the moves made by the Winnipeg Jets. And almost as importantly, at least in my opinion, the moves not made by the Winnipeg Jets. Ron Hainsey remains a Winnipeg Jet. How surprised are you at that fact come 6:05 or so this evening?
Well, first off, before we get into the moves that the Jets didn't make, welcome back to you, Drew.
Thank you.
You were gone for 4 shows, 2 weeks, Columbia. Mm-hmm. We got to start off with that. Glad to have you back.
Appreciate your gesture.
Even though, you know, we gave you a good-natured ribbing while you were gone, we're glad to have you back, my friend.
Thank you.
As far as the Winnipeg Jets go, we talked about this while you were gone, whether or not they were going to trade Ron Hainsey, should they trade Ron Hainsey. Mm-hmm. Richie and I had a bit of a difference in opinion, and I thought that the Jets should hang on to Ron Hainsey. Now, I'm not going to use this opportunity to say that I was right, because I believe that Kevin Cheveldayoff was fielding calls, and I believe there was some interest in Ron Hainsey, but I'm not surprised that the Winnipeg Jets stood pat. I'm not surprised that Chevy just went out and acquired one player, that being Mike Santarelli, and didn't make any moves, you know, whether that was trading Nikolai Antropov or maybe going after a guy like Drew Stafford and maybe moving out a guy like Alexander Bobrovsky. You know, the Jets are first place in the Southeast Division right now, 2 points up on the Washington Capitals. Very much realistic to think that the Jets can make the playoffs, Richie. So I'm not surprised. Whether I think that the Jets should have made a move, I do think the Jets still lack a physical defenseman and some scoring up the middle and on the wings. So I'm a little bit disappointed that the Jets weren't able to bring anybody else in, but I guess glass half full. Mike Santarelli is a guy that scored 20 goals, and maybe he can give the Jets a little bit more than Nikolai Antropov was giving them, because, you know, with the exception of a few games, he wasn't giving them much. So I'm not surprised that Chevy didn't make a whole bunch of moves, Richie, but I do think that they probably could have benefited from making a few moves.
You know, I thought Kevin Cheveldayoff should have traded Ron Hainsey, but I'm not surprised that he didn't. And, you know, there's differing opinions on whether or not he should have or not. I think that he probably should have, because you want to just compile as many assets as you can, and then you can use those to acquire players to, again, put draft picks together and acquire other draft picks. You just want to be asset heavy, I think, in the position that the Jets are in. You know, the teams that made deals today and that dealt a fair amount of assets, whether that be Minnesota or even Columbus, those teams have young players. And so when you have a lot of young players, it's like the Toronto Blue Jays. You know, when you have a lot of young players, then you have to at some point use them to create a team that can win now and try and win in the future as well. But Minnesota can trade all the players for Pominville because they have a system in place of a lot of good young players. For the Jets to get to that point, I think players like Ron Hainsey have to go. And I realize that, you know, Ron Hainsey helps you get in the playoffs. But based on Washington's moves today, like, of course, Washington's moves made close to the deadline, so the Jets probably couldn't have reacted to that. But based on that move, and based on the fact that Tampa now has a goalie, and these teams having games in hand, the Jets aren't in a great situation, great place to make the playoffs as they were a few games ago with Ron Hainsey. So the question is, does the drop-off between Hainsey and the next defenseman, or however you load it up, that's always, to me, is what's the difference between him and the next best player? And to me, it's not worth not trading him for a second round pick or a second and a fourth or a second and a third. That's my personal opinion.
I tend to agree with you. I more than tend to agree with you. In fact, I think it is a mistake by the Winnipeg Jets to hold on to Ron Hainsey. If the only purpose for holding on to him is the thought about a short-term gain of a playoff, the chances of making the playoffs, with all due respect to the team as currently constructed, Washington is far better than they are now, especially after the moves that Washington made today. The Winnipeg Jets are not, right now they might be first in the Southeast Division, but to my humble opinion, that's strictly that's just on paper. I don't think realistically 10 games down the road from now, the Winnipeg Jets are going to be first in the Southeast. I don't think they're going to be a playoff team. So, and you know, I hope that I'm wrong. I hope that I'm wrong, you know, at the end of this month. Mm-hmm. But for the Jets to hold on to Ron Hainsey, so not trade him for whatever you can get for him, not make the playoffs, which I'm hypothesizing is going to happen, and then potentially lose him as an unrestricted free agent, I think that one of the biggest problems that this team, one of the biggest mistakes this team could make is losing an asset for absolutely nothing.
Guys, there is a very good chance that they do lose this asset for nothing, mm-hmm. and there is a chance that the Jets will re-sign Ron Hainsey, but I tend to believe that the Jets won't re-sign Ron Hainsey, and this is my reasoning. You've got Jacob Trouba coming in, just signed a 3-year entry-level deal. You've got Bogo coming off of a bridge contract. He's up for a deal. I would have to believe that the Jets want to sign him to 5 or 6 years. Dustin Byfuglien has 3 years left on his contract. Tobias Enstrom is going to be entering the first year of a new 5-year contract. Mark Stewart has 1 year left on his contract. You have Paul Postman, Zach Redmond, who are guys that are kind of 6-7 defensemen, guys that they want to see more of. So when you factor that all in, you'd have to think that re-signing Ron Hainsey to 2 or 3 years at, let's say, $2 or $3 million a year, probably doesn't factor into the equation.
Who's playing the left side of the Jets' defense? If Ron Hainsey's not here next year, I don't think he will be.
You can sign somebody to play the left side, Drew, but the point is if he's going to go, then why not get something for him? And I think what you want to do is use an example of San Jose,
sure,
where they have pending UFAs, and Doug Wilson audio was played earlier on in the show, I think with Rick and JP. He says, you know, we were going to lose these guys, and we had to get something in return for them. So he trades Doug Murray, and he trades Ryan Clough, gets a bunch of picks. For Doug Murray, who is an example, now him and Ron Hainsey are not the same player. They're kind of totally different, really. But he gets 2 second-round picks for Doug Murray. We don't know what the offers were for Ron Hainsey. I assume there were some offers. We don't know what the offers were, but Doug Wilson trades Doug Murray, gets 2 second-rounders, then trades a 6th, 7th, or 6th for Scott Hannon, who's a downgrade on Doug Murray, but not that much of a downgrade on Doug Murray. I mean, he is. But for the 11 games left, how much of a downgrade is it? Over the course of a season, it's significant. Over the course of a short amount of time, it could be, it could not be. So that's kind of what I stand on, is you could have even traded Hainsey and then traded a 7th or whatever for Wade Redden, or a 7th for, if you wanted to still make a run this year, but still recoup something for an asset. Now, of course, we're going based on the assumption that we know what the compensation was. We don't, but we can assume it was at least a third, if not a second and something. So, or 2/3 or whatever it may be. But I do agree, Drew. In my opinion, I think they ought to have done that.
And I think that's exactly what happened. Yeah, of course, we don't know exactly what happened. Chevy was on H&L, and you were just on H&L. He's not going to say exactly what happened. But I think that's exactly what happened. Wade Redden was traded to the Boston Bruins. The Blues acquired Jay Bomeister, and they acquired Jordan Leopold. They had a plethora of defensemen, so they got a 7th-round pick. Now, I think Hainsey probably was being offered for a 2nd-round pick, and the Jets were offered a 3rd or 4th-round pick, and Chevy said, hold on, we already have 2 third-rounders. We could use Hainsey here down the stretch. I'm going to hold on to him. And that decision is, you know, for us to criticize and give the reasons why that might not have been the best decision.
I just think that goes back to my point that I was making earlier, and I've made it for a number of weeks now, that losing an asset for absolutely nothing, if that's what ends up happening, if he leaves as an unrestricted free agent on July 1st or whenever the actual day is now.
July 5th.
July 5th. Yeah. If he leaves for absolutely nothing, it's a mistake made by the Jets organization. I just don't think that for a lot of... for a guy who is certainly a bona fide NHL player. I'm not talking about the Randy Joneses of the world who leave for nothing. Randy Jones is a fringe NHLer at best.
He's not in the NHL this year.
Exactly. Ron Hainsey is a bona fide NHL player. To lose a bona fide NHL player for absolutely nothing is a significant detriment to this team.
You know, I mean, it's a move that I would have made. Now, we're talking about second, third-round picks, so we'll make the difference at the end of the day. Maybe not in one situation, but if you don't do it three or four times, then it does really, to me, hinder the development of the organization. I mean, I guess the other question is, you know, with Nick Antropov, is were you going to trade him? Those are the rumblings. I mean, would somebody take him? But if somebody would take him and you could get fourth-round pick for him, whatever it may be, the other question is, you know, should he have been in the lineup last night, or is the game so important that you put him in the lineup? To me, you know, if it's going to be a fourth round or whatever it may be, you just play Antropov and you take your chances.
I'm not even touching Antropov because we know what his value. I mean, if he was healthy today, his value wasn't worth more than a fourth round pick, which is, might as well toss a coin at that point in time if you're able to hit on a draft pick.
At Santarelli can probably provide close to what Antropov can. Exactly. So it's a whole thing of replacing that guy. The question is, you know, if it's worth more, so a second or a third. More so a second, then the difference is what's important to me.
I have to say I'm surprised when listening to, Chevy was on, obviously, with H&L, and he did his conference call, and he was on TSN as well. I'm surprised at the number of comments from people that, or the comments from Chevy himself, where he was, you know, that he was sort of apologizing for not being more active and trying to acquire people. Acquire players. I don't think this was the time for the Jets to be trying to acquire players on trade deadline day. I think this was the time for the Jets to be trying to, you know, get rid of a guy like Ron Hainsey. I'm not upset that the Jets didn't, you know, send a third round pick somewhere for, you know, one of the random players who got traded today.
And so long as, and I'll leave it to Ezzy here, but so long as it's not a rental, I'm fine with them making trades to try and improve the squad.
Right. I'm talking rental specifically.
There's no need for a rental if you're the Jets.
Right. And it sounded like he was apologizing for not being able to acquire a rental.
And I believe Chevy because I think his hands were tied. I mean, they had to play Dustin Byfuglien on fourth off injury, and you've got Stewart coming back.
They didn't have to play him on forward.
Well, they didn't have to, but they chose to because they had an injury
on
forward. It was, sure, it was, yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. But you have a situation where the Jets have hung on to Hainsey because they felt that whatever options they have, whether it's Artie Kolda, Derek Meach, that wasn't going to be enough. And you'd have to think, you know, just a quick aside, Chevy's done a great job on waivers now. Grant Klitsam, James Wright, Antti Miettinen, getting Mike Santarelli and giving up nothing. I mean, got to give him credit for that. If anything, he's made a good living here over the last 2 years, making nice waiver wire acquisitions.
But hold on, Ezzy. Santarelli, duly noted, but Santarelli is a guy, they put a waiver claim in, the waivers go in at noon every day and finish at noon the next day, as David Poyle told us on this show. And so, I mean, the Jets are probably ranked about 18 to 22 around there. So there were eight teams who passed on him.
Yep.
If you can't make the Florida, I mean, you know, and maybe he comes in and he catches lightning in a bottle and he becomes a 20-goal scorer again. And if he does, great, great move. It doesn't cost you. I think
there's no downside.
I don't think there's a downside to the move at all. I'm never going to criticize a waiver claim because what does it cost you? It costs you a nominal sum of money plus the guy's contract, which
possible he's only here for 10 games.
Well, which is in this case is 10 games.
He's a rental
because he's a UFA. So I don't have a problem with the move, but to say that this is the answer to what ails the Winnipeg Jets, I think, is probably...
And Chevy wouldn't say that either.
No, he wouldn't, but, I mean, let's keep our expectations in check for Mike Santarelli. But you are right. If the Jets can get out of Santarelli similar production that they got from James Wright or Grant Klitsam, they've been, you know, okay in their lineup.
But I think in the bigger picture, and I think part of today is it says a lot about St. John's, and it says that they don't have confidence in St. John's because if they did, and I realize they called up Aaron Gagne and sent down Patrice Cormier, but if they had confidence in St. John's for some form of scoring, they would not have claimed Santarelli, really.
Absolutely.
And when Cormier was in the lineup, he was playing 4 or 5 minutes
a
game.
So. When he was playing at his absolute peak. Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. 20 minutes past the top of the hour. Welcome back to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're going to start breaking down the trades by going division by division, team by team. We'll start with the Southeast Division.
Southeast Division.
The Southeast Division, the division that is currently led by the Winnipeg Jets, as we were discussing in the last segment. Probably, well, both Tampa and Washington were the biggest winners in that division, I would say. They made the biggest splashes, at least. We'll talk about winners and losers at the end of the program. Let's start with Washington acquiring very late in the trade deadline. probably the latest trade announced that I can remember in a long, long time. They acquire Martin Irat and Michael Latta from the Nashville Predators in exchange for Philippe Forsberg. Irat, definitely bona fide NHLer. Michael Latta playing for Milwaukee of the AHL. And, you know, Forsberg was their first-round pick last year. What are your thoughts about this deal? Does this make, you know, does this put Washington in the playoffs definitely in your mind?
Nothing's definite. It certainly helps them get into the playoffs. It shores up the right side. It provides another offensive force. I mean, you look at their offense now, their top six. Ovechkin, Backstrom, Ribeiro, you have Brouwer, you have Leik. I mean, you have Leik can play different positions. You can play those guys anywhere. You have Erat. I mean, you're pretty loaded up front now. Now, do I think Washington can beat anyone? Absolutely. Do I think they're as good as Pittsburgh and Boston? No. And what they've done is they've traded their first-round pick for a player that, to me, isn't a difference-maker. He's a good player. To me, he's a second-line winger. He's solid. He'll provide you at peak, you know, 55 to 60 points. That's peak playing. Now, he's going to be playing with the best centers he's ever played with in Ribeiro or Backstrom, but he's also played big minutes before and has never really taken that next step. So he's a second-line winger to me, and they've traded a first-line. They've a top prospect. So I don't necessarily hate the deal from Washington's perspective, but I like it more from Nashville's perspective.
You know, the trades came in pretty fast and furious today. And this one came in late. They came in very late. As Richie would know, he was here on TSN Radio all day. But to me, this one was a bit of a head-scratcher. I know a lot of people were scratching their heads about the Gaborik trade, and I know we're going to get into that a little bit more when we talk about the Rangers and the Blue Jackets. But the writing was on the wall for Gaborik in New York. Tortorella was, you know, on his case, and he wasn't playing well at all this year for a guy that makes the money he makes. But this trade, Richie, I mean, you're trading a guy who arguably, you know, on forward, not on defense, for the Nashville Predators has been their most consistent player for, what, 8 or 9 years now? And you're trading him for a guy who Craig Button on the show said he could easily go in the top three, Philip Forsberg. He's got lots of offensive upside. He was good in the junior tournament, and all accounts are that he could be a first-line NHLer. So this trade to me was a little bit weird, not from the Washington perspective, but from the Nashville perspective, because they're trading a guy who, even this year as well, has been very good for them, and they're trading for the future. Now, Nashville, for them, it's not even a certainty for them to make the playoffs. And in that sense, I found this one of the most interesting trades, because both teams, who are almost in the playoffs every year, are both kind of scratching and clawing to get in a playoff spot. So for me, it was a little bit weird in the sense that they obviously decided that they didn't want to go ahead with Martin Irat, a guy that I thought would be one untouchable player on their team. But Philip Forsberg, you know, for them, is going to be a key part of their future. They do not have a lot of young prospects on forward.
Right now, Nashville's tied with St. Louis for the last playoff spot in the West. St. Louis has three games in hand on Nashville. I think this trade, it tells me that if Nashville, you know, makes the playoffs, it's a bonus, but it's not really a do or die in this matter. Martin Irat under contract, $4.5 million for the next 3 years. You know, I think from Washington's perspective, the question is if Michael Latta can turn into a, you know, a top six or a top nine player, and Martin Irat, you know, firms up and is, becomes a real bona fide, you know, or maybe even a high end top six player, then maybe this deal makes more sense. I think Michael Latta has a lot to say about this deal still.
That's a good point, Drew. And you know, just on the topic of, you know, Irat's contract, that's what makes it a little bit even more, you know, surprising for me. He's under contract for 3 years at a pretty good rate. And what does this mean for, you know, the impending UFA Mike Ribeiro? Because you'd have to think that the way he's played, they want to offer him a contract. Mm-hmm. But going out and getting Marty Erat, you've got Ovechkin there long term. You've got Backstrom long term. You've got other guys on the team that have already been signed, Carlson. I don't know. Maybe Ribeiro is a guy that they aren't going to re-sign in the offseason. But it definitely helps them out. I think that the Capitals definitely can use more scoring. And, you know, a guy like Erat will help that out big time.
I mean, they're the favorites in the Southeast right now. Based on the past few games, they played themselves in the position for their GM to make that trade, and the Jets kind of played Washington into a position to make the George McPhee make that trade.
The other big deal coming out of the Southeast division was the one that saw Tampa Bay acquire Ben Bishop from the Ottawa mm-hmm. Senators in exchange for Corey Conacher and a 2013 fourth-round pick. You know, if you go back 8 months, the Tampa Bay Lightning probably thought that they solved their goaltending problems when they acquired Anders Lindback. That hasn't proven to be the case. They go out, they sort of double down on that bet by getting Ben Bishop. Is Ben Bishop now the long-term answer in Tampa Bay?
I brought this up earlier. I mean, there's a couple of questions that you need to ask. I think the first question is, Tampa didn't want to acquire Ben Bishop last year for a second. That was at least the rumor. Now the question is,
they could have had him from St. Louis, you're saying.
That's exactly right. So they traded 2 second-round picks, 2012, and 1 2013 third-round pick, and Sebastian Kjaer to the Predators for Lindback, Kyle Wilson, and a 7th-round pick. The question to me is this, is if you...
That deal happened in the offseason.
So if you thought Lindback, at least close in proximity, if you thought Lindback was worth that much, and you didn't think Bishop was worth a second, what's changed that significantly? And obviously you've seen Lindback up front, but talent evaluation-wise, you have to be wondering, you know, Tampa, what's going on there? Why does that happen? Now, give them credit for admitting a mistake and trading an asset to get Ben Bishop. But it was mismanagement by Stevie Eiserman, who's a pretty smart guy.
Richie, I said this, I'm sorry to cut you off. I said this a month ago for people that listen to our midweek show, and I wasn't saying that anything that, you know, most hockey fans probably wouldn't say themselves, that the Lightning needed to go out and, mm-hmm. and get another goaltender because Garon was horrible and Lindback was playing pretty poorly as well. I think the Ottawa Senators got a steal here. I mean, Corey Conacher is a young player, 23 years old, and sure, he's cooled off since the beginning of the season, but led the AHL in scoring. What do the Ottawa Senators need? They need scoring. I think the Ottawa Senators did very well here, and I was a little bit shocked at how much they gave up. I mean, you get a goaltender to come in, and Ben Bishop has been a guy who's kind of developed late. He was in the AHL. He had to kind of prove himself in the AHL in order to get traded eventually to Ottawa from St. Louis because St. Louis had Halak and Elliott. But they gave up a lot here to get Ben Bishop. And Ben Bishop, sure, you know, he was, you know, he had that tag. He was the most talented goaltender not in the NHL. Sure, he's big and he's got lots of talent, but you gave up a guy that could have been a part of your forward group for a long time there.
If you're Ottawa, from Ottawa's perspective, you traded a second. Bishop came in, played well for you this year, helped bridge the gap when there was injuries. You turn him into Conacher in a fourth. Brian Murray, kudos.
Yeah, well, and we'll talk about it from the Ottawa perspective when we break down the Northeast Division, but certainly a big win for Ottawa. Moving on in the South.
A win doesn't mean a loss, necessarily. If you look at it in a vacuum, I don't think it's a loss. In a big picture, I think you didn't manage as you should have.
Right. I'm not saying that one team has to be a winner, one team has to be a loser, and that's frequently the case in trades nowadays, is that it's a trade that benefits both teams. Carolina made some moves. They acquired Marc-Andre Bergeron. This was yesterday, in exchange for Adam Hall and a 7th-round pick.
And Adam Hall was claimed off waivers, and a 7th-round pick is the toss, and so essentially nothing.
Yeah, so really Marc-Andre Bergeron for...
And Hall went to the Flyers on waivers.
That's right. So he was traded to Tampa Bay from Carolina, didn't clear waivers, and Philadelphia picked him up. So, like you said, the Carolina got Bergeron for nothing. They also got out from underneath UC Jokinen's contract. Again, they only acquired a conditional 7th-round pick. So, again,
but they ate some money on that.
They ate some money on
that? Apparently, yeah. They don't know exactly how much it was, at least the last report, and I've been here for a while, so I don't remember correctly. But I may not remember correctly, but if you piece it together, Jokinen's available on waivers.
Yeah.
That was before Crosby's injury, but he's available on waivers. Nobody claims him. And the idea is, people say, why trade for him if you didn't claim him on waivers? Well, because people can take money, teams can take money back. They can pay for a little bit of the contract in a trade, or they can trade you a contract and make it a little bit more even money.
Right.
But in terms of Jokinen, we'll talk about it from the Pittsburgh perspective, but Carolina kind of sells here, and you have to think that's, you know, because they get rid of UC Jokinen.
Yeah.
And, I mean, over the past little bit here, Pekkanen's out. They didn't add anybody there. So
that injury was gruesome.
So they kind of threw in the towel almost.
I think they threw in the towel, especially when Pekkanen just went down for the rest of the year. I mean, his ankle injury yesterday, I think, said that they're not going to be able to overtake Washington and Winnipeg to come and end up in the playoffs after that injury.
Well, Drew, when I saw that yesterday, I thought to myself, well, I know what Carolina's going to do tomorrow. They're going to go out and get a defenseman. They didn't do that today, and I agree with you guys. How Ray Shiro got UC Jokinen and got Jim Rutherford to eat up that salary, I don't know. I guess that we'll have to leave that to your imagination. But the Penguins did really well here to get another guy. Everyone thought Pittsburgh was done. But, yeah, Carolina not going after a veteran defenseman here. I know they got Marc-Andre Bergeron. But Marc-Andre Bergeron does not replace Joni Pitkinen and Justin Falk. No, Justin Falk might be back in the next couple of weeks, but it's not a guarantee.
And McBain's been a healthy scratch there. You know, in terms of Bergeron, he adds an offensive element. He's great offensively.
He's a power play guy.
He can't play defense. In terms of Jokinen, and the question is, you have him for this year and next year, $3 million for Carolina. And we'll confirm here whether they ate some salary, but why so adamant about getting rid of him? That's kind of what I'm wondering. I mean, he's that's $3 million isn't crazy. It's just above the average. He can play a little power play.
He scored a goal when he was in Winnipeg here.
He can play on the half wall. He can play different situations. Yep. I mean, he can stick handle, wing, center. I mean, for $3 million, why so adamant? Why do you want to get rid of him so badly?
The only thing that I can think of is that they're freeing up salary, and he really fell out of favor in Carolina, and I think that's a little bit obvious, but you're right. His salary is kind of around the average, a little bit above the average, and they don't have that many natural goal scorers after the Staal brothers, Semin and Skinner. You know, they've kind of got a bit of a workman-like forward group there, so you'd have to think that it was really a salary dump. They ate the salary.
They ate part of the
salary. So I don't know if you want to call that the salary dump or salary eat, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, I'm not even going there. The last trade involving a Southeast Division team, Florida Panthers acquiring a fourth-round pick from Edmonton in exchange for Jared Smithson.
Jared Smithson adds a face-off specialist to the Oilers, really. I think he's at 54.8, if I recall correctly. He's a fourth-line guy who can take draws for you. Florida gets a fourth-round pick. They're not going to...
I believe that they acquired Smithson at the trade deadline last year in exchange for a seventh-round pick from Nashville. Isn't that right?
That may be correct.
Yeah, so if they've... I mean,
he was on Nashville for most of his career.
So if they've moved from getting a seventh-round pick or trading a seventh and then getting a fourth for the guy, and you get a year of service, not bad there by Florida, but obviously they've thrown in the towel for this year. Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com. We're going division by division, team by team, recapping the NHL trade deadline. Let's continue on.
Atlantic Division.
Atlantic Division, we have to start in New York, New York City, with the... I call this a shocking trade, in my opinion. The shocking trade of Marian Gaborik to the Columbus Blue Jackets in exchange for Derek Dorsett, John Moore, Derek Brassard, and a sixth-round pick. I know there'd been some scuttlebutt about Marian Gaborik, and maybe he's on his way out, but to actually see it happen, that caught me off guard.
It didn't catch me off guard, guys, because of the way Marian Gaborik has played this year and how clearly out of favor he has fallen with Torts. And he was out of favor with Torts last year, even though he put up 40 goals. The New York Rangers have been one of the most disappointing teams for me, and I imagine a lot of people, along with the Philadelphia Flyers. But you look at who they got, Richie, and I know Derek Dorsett's injured, and he's kind of just a tough guy, crash and banger. Yeah. But they got Derek Brassard, who's a guy that it was either 06 or 07. He was a high top 10 draft pick. And they got John Moore, who was a guy that was rumored to be part of that Nash trade. When they needed a defenseman to throw in there. The Rangers right now, I look at this trade, and yeah, I can understand why people are a little bit shocked because, you know, Gabrick's got that superstar label and all that. But you look at what they need right now, and yeah, of course they need goals, but they need a little bit of grit on that team, and they need a bit of a wake-up call in New York. They're still kind of, you know, a bubble team, and they still haven't made their push yet. And I'm going to be surprised if the Rangers don't get in just because of how good they are on forward and in goal. But I also look at it for the future, Drew, because Gabrick's got 1 year left on his contract. But if you look at the guys who are kind of the core of the team moving forward, you've got Derek Stepan, you've got Chris Kreider, you've got Miller, JT Miller, you've got Nash, and Richards is under contract for several more years. So to me, I don't think Marian Gaborik was part of the future for the Rangers, and that's why I think they made the move.
Dorsett has a broken collarbone.
Yeah.
He was supposed to be out for the season. Now, I'm not sure if that was kind of assumed they weren't going to make the playoffs and he was out for the season, but I would expect.
Yeah, he probably won't play.
We'll see.
I think he was on TSN this afternoon. I believe he said he's a couple weeks away from beginning to skate or something. So he could end up contributing to the New York Rangers this year. Another trade the Rangers made, and this was yesterday, Ryan Clough they acquired from the San Jose Sharks in exchange for a second-round pick, a third-round pick, and then a conditional second-round pick in 2014. So, Richard, you know, the Rangers' moves in total, you know, is are they a better team today than they were 3 days ago?
To me, they're a better team today than they were 3 days ago. Are they a better team today than they were at the end of last year's playoffs? Jury's out. And so I guess it's the same angle as the Tampa Bay angle in terms of Yzerman. Do I mind Bishop for Konecker? No, I think that's a good deal. That helps him. Do I like it in the when I take into account the fact they could have had him last year? Not so much. Same thing with New York. I mean, you had Gabrick and you had the other pieces. You made the trade for Nash. And I was on H&L. We had Pat Leonard on from New York Daily News, and the question asked to him was, you know, if you traded Gabrick and for Nash, you know, essentially those two guys, and then, you know, Dorsett for Proust, Moore for Erickson, and then Anisimov for Brassard. I mean, who wins? And the jury's kind of out on that answer. It really is. So have you spun your wheels? But if so, from this perspective, I think you're happy with it. And that's, I'd rather be the Rangers at the end of last season than the Rangers now.
Because the Rangers now have 10 games in which they have to come together and prove that this entire season isn't a complete and total bust.
Which I think they can do. And the team in New York, if they get Mark Stahl back, that's, to me, the key.
Yep.
And I have to assume, based upon their lack of activity on the back end, that they think Mark Stahl's coming back because he shores up a great top four.
It's a good point, Richie. If they didn't think he was going to come back, and we've got to remember, he's been out for a month now. Mm-hmm. So he's healed up, and you know he's had time, and they're going to keep that under wraps. They're not going to say Mark Stahl's coming back the day before he comes back. But I think you're bang on that one. You know, as far as the Clough acquisition goes, I know he doesn't have any goals this year, but he's a guy that I believe he's got 320 goal seasons under his belt, if I'm not mistaken. He's got at least 220 goal seasons under his belt. But he's 30. He played all of his career with San Jose. I like that move from the sense that he's moving from the West to the East. And it was clear that Clough wasn't part of the long-term plans in San Jose. And everyone gets fixated on buyers and sellers. But when you consider that, you know, Clough wasn't going to re-sign in San Jose, I think the Rangers did a good job to get him. Now, they gave up a second rounder and they gave up a third rounder. You know, there was a bit of a price to pay, but you'd have to think that Clough is a guy that they might want to give a 3 or 4 year contract after, you know, the season's over.
He's 30 years old. He's a big boy, 6 feet, over 220. Yep. I've always liked his game. He's more of an up and down winger, more of a shooter than a passer. He'll go to the net. He's been successful in the playoffs before, having scored 18 playoff goals in 68 games. It's tough to play in the playoffs. He's exactly what they needed. Yep. I think that price to pay was fine. You're trying to win now with this squad. That's the thing. This squad is built to win now, and I think Ryan Clough helps you do that, regardless of the fact that he hasn't scored this year. Okay, he hasn't scored this year. But what about the end of last year? I mean, has that much changed since the end of last year? And if not, then you're probably happy with the acquisition.
If the Rangers sneak in, how dangerous are they?
And we were saying earlier, what if you're Pittsburgh? You've played all year, and then you get draw the Rangers in round one. Lundqvist, and then Stahl, Girardi, Delzotto, McDonough, Nash, Richards. Callahan.
It's a team that was one goal away from going to the Stanley Cup Finals. So to answer your question, I think very dangerous because, like I said, the Rangers have not even begun to make their push yet. They're still kind of middling, and I think that they're going to make it. You know, I've been wrong many times before, and I'll continue to be wrong, but I think that, you know, they're going to make it. They're too good. They're just too good, with or without Gabrick.
2 points behind both New Jersey and New York for seventh in the Eastern Conference, and they do have a game in hand on New Jersey and two games in hand on the Islanders.
Philadelphia, on the other hand, I'm not so sure about.
Well, let's talk about Philadelphia and their ongoing quest to eventually own every single goaltender that's ever played in the NHL. They acquired Steve Mason from the Columbus Blue Jackets in exchange for Michael Layton and a third-round pick in 2015. You know, are you telling me that Steve Mason's the answer to any sort of goaltending problem at this point in his career?
Where do you start here, Drew? I mean, it's kind of a never-ending comedy of errors in terms of the net-minding situation in Philadelphia.
Oh, I thought you were talking about me. Sorry, go ahead.
You know, Steve Mason is a pending RFA, but you traded Bobrovsky there. He's been great in Columbus, and now you're trading for Steve Mason. Why don't you just trade the two of them for each other? But anyhow, I mean, is he going to be the guy who pushes Brizgalov? A lot of people will tell you that he was a product of Ken Hitchcock's system, and Ken Hitchcock got him a nice contract like he did, you know, Ron Hainsey and other people. I guess there's no real risk here for Philadelphia. So, okay, sure, go for it, a guy who has talent and has been good before. But is this going to get rid of the goalie issue on a team that is kind of built to win now as well? Probably not.
It's a weird trade, Richie, because the Philadelphia Flyers go out and they acquire Steve Mason, who's essentially been relegated to the backup role behind Bobrovsky. Mm-hmm.
He's an RFA after this season. Yeah,
he's an RFA, so they'll have an option to sign him as well. But you give up a third-rounder in 2015, and you give up Leighton, who isn't part of your
right.
long-term plans, right? But Ilya Brizgalov is a guy that I'm a fan of. You know, he was good in Phoenix, and he's been good in spurts for Philadelphia, but he's not playing his A game. They're playing the Montreal Canadiens tonight. The game just started. But you've gone out and you've gotten Steve Mason to what? Be your backup to push Brizgalov? I guess so. But what's the long-term plan? And I know the talk has been a lot about, will the Philadelphia Flyers exercise their buyout option and buy out, you know, 7 years and $39 million or whatever's left on mm-hmm. Brizgalov's contract. To me, that would be a very expensive way to get rid of Ilya Brizgalov, but maybe that's what they're thinking. They're thinking maybe Steve Mason's a guy that we can get for pretty cheap on a 2 year deal, and we're going to buy out Brizgalov. I'm not sure. To me, I'm not sure what the long term thinking is there.
They probably can get Steve Mason for pretty cheap on a 2 year deal, but if they go into next season with Steve Mason as the number one goaltender, and I can't believe they won't buy out Brizgalov. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean the Philadelphia Flyers are any closer to, you know, getting back to the Stanley Cup Finals.
Keep in mind also, if they qualify Mason, they have to qualify him at $2.9 million.
Right.
And they're not going to pay him $2.9 million. Now they can not qualify him and still sign him, but so can every other team.
That's Richie, right. The Canucks decided to hang on to Roberto Luongo, but the way I look at what the Flyers are facing with Ilya Brizgalov is Luongo 2.0. Who's going to take that contract?
Not as talented.
Right. No, and you're going to face a situation where how big of a goalie market is there for Brizgalov? I would say it's pretty small.
I would agree with you there. Two final deals, smaller deals in the Atlantic Division. UC Jokinen goes to Pittsburgh, like we yep. spoke about before. Good depth player for the Penguins.
Yeah, can do everything they need him to do, if anything.
And one of my personal favorite players, Steve Sullivan, goes from Phoenix to New Jersey in exchange for a seventh-round pick.
And where did he start his career?
In New Jersey, the team that originally drafted him and then traded him to Toronto in the Dougie Gilmore trade.
Who, Drew, let's do a trivia, because we were doing it earlier off-air. Who else was in that deal with Sullivan?
Was it Alan McCauley?
Yeah, that's one.
Wow.
That's one.
Somebody's been
Jason Smith.
Okay, yeah. I don't remember Jason
He's
Smith.
He's the captain
remember,
for a little bit.
I remembered Alan McCauley.
Ottawa.
And the New York Islanders, no moves by the Islanders.
On Sullivan, I mean, he cost you a seventh-round pick, and he's a guy who Lou Lamoriello obviously is familiar with, having drafted him decades ago. But in reality, I mean, he's a guy who can create some offense, and he's on his last legs, but seventh-round pick.
Doesn't matter.
Lamoriello always has a way of just making a small move that ends up working out and costing him nothing.
Right. Loktionov and even Pony's been all right. But if somebody doesn't start scoring for the Devils, because Kovalchuk's still injured, if somebody doesn't start scoring for the Devils, they won't make the playoffs. They're in I believe, ninth right now.
No, seventh.
Oh, seventh, sorry. I guess they jumped ahead of the Rangers there. But they're a team that really, I mean, you've got Zajac who's struggling. Kovalchuk's probably going to be out for another week or two. They had to make that move.
I'll tell you about New Jersey. You know, they make the playoffs, and there's talk about Paul McClain, and there's talk about Joel Quenneville, and I personally like Pierre DeBoer. But I think Pierre DeBoer ought to be a top three Jack Adams candidate if the Devils make the playoffs. It's just been, he is a great coach. He gets more of that team than he should, and I think he doesn't get enough attention and positive attention for what he does there.
Quickly, you find with the Islanders standing pat?
You know, they signed Vyshnovsky.
Yeah, they signed him, so that took him off the trade market.
And you know what? I'm completely fine with that. Who do they have to trade, really, off the roster anymore?
The only question would be Mark Streit.
And they're still trying to re-sign him.
Yeah. Yep.
So I don't have an issue with that.
Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290. I guess Northeast Division, that's Northeast Division music because they're from Kingston?
That's right.
Okay, I was trying to figure out your logic there, but I can accept that.
Remo knows what he's doing.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined by Richard Pollock. Ezra Ginsberg, producer Remus, is on loan from Rick Ralph and the TSN 1290 Roundtable.
Come on, I'm pretty sure Richie is on loan from Rick Ralph and the Roundtable.
I'm pretty sure Richie's on loan from every show on the stations as today has unfolded.
Is Richie on CNN Crossfire tonight?
Anyways, let's continue on going division by division, team by team.
Northeast Division.
Northeast Division music leads us into the Northeast Division as a whole, where the biggest moves were probably the moves made by the Buffalo Sabres, who I would say have officially started the rebuild. Today, they traded Jason Pominville, who was their captain, and a 2014 fourth-round pick to the Minnesota Wild. In exchange, they get Matt Hackett, Johan Larson, a 2013 first-round pick, and a 2014 second-round pick. When you factor in this move, plus the moves that they made earlier this week in acquiring second-round picks for both Robin Regier and Jordan Leopold, is the rebuild on in Buffalo?
I don't know how you can say it isn't, Richie. They've decided to trade Jason Pominville. I thought they were going to hang on to him, but they've decided to get what they can now. You know, Matt Hackett, the son of Jeff Hackett, who you'll remember played for many teams, the Habs and the Sharks, was a guy who kind of was the third goalie, played a little bit for the Wild last year. But yeah, it's on. I mean, they traded Regier to the LA Kings. They traded Leopold to the St. Louis Blues. Basically, the only kind of guys left now are you've got Cody Hodgson, you've got Tyler Ennis, you've got Nathan Gerby, others. They still have a pretty good group of forwards. And, you know, their defense is still pretty young. You've got Ryan Miller there. I have no idea if they're going to trade Ryan Miller. I think everyone has their eyes on Ryan Miller now, and they think, you know, he's going to be a kind of draft day guy that moves. I have no idea. But trading Jason Pominville, Richie, I think is more of a sign that you're rebuilding than trading Leopold or Regier.
I mean, you're getting a nice haul. I think Darcy Regier has shown past two trade deadlines patience as a virtue, because he waits on the to get Cody Hodgson last year near the deadline. Right. And then this year he'd be able to trade Jason Pominville. He's able to net, according to Hockey's Future, the sixth best prospect of the Wild in Johan Larson.
Also got traded Paul Gostad at the deadline last year and got a first-round pick from Nashville.
That's right. And you have Matthew Hackett in terms of goaltending. He's a seventh-ranked prospect in a stacked Minnesota. Like, remember, it's a very deep system, so he might be number two or three or one in another system. You get Matt Hackett, you get a first, and you get another pick.
Yep.
For a year and a half of Pominville. I actually like to trade from both perspectives, and we'll talk about Minnesota later. But nice work by Darcy Regier. And give Darcy Regier credit. I mean, he may not be long for that job, but if he isn't, he's certainly stacked the cupboard with some options for the future GM, whoever that may be, if it's not him.
Moving on in the Northeast Division, the Boston Bruins, this didn't happen today, of course. It happened yesterday. Acquired Jaromir Jagr from the Dallas Stars in exchange for Lane McDermott, Cody Payne, and a conditional second-round pick. How does Jagr fit into the Boston Bruins and their Stanley Cup aspirations?
He fits in perfectly. Why? Because he controls the puck down low. He's big. He can create for himself, create for other people. He can play with Krejci. They both check. He can slot Horton down. He can play on different lines. He can play on the power play. Love this move. Love this move for Boston. Thought it made a total sense.
And Jaromir Jagr still...
Sorry, let me quickly interrupt you. Is Jagr a better fit there than Iginla would have been?
I don't know if he's a better fit, but he's close to as good of a fit.
Go ahead. It's miraculous. We talked about this, you know, early on the season, early on in this abbreviated season, you know, talking about Jaromir Jagr and Teemu Selänne. These guys are still scoring at this age, mm-hmm. and Jaromir Jagr is arguably one of the best European players in ever to play the game, along with Selänne, and he still got it, and he fits in because he'll play anywhere. He can play on the first line. Mm-hmm. He'll play on the fourth line. He's too good to play on the fourth line, but it doesn't really matter where you put him. You can put Jaromir Jagr with anybody. You know, he was playing with Jamie Benn in Dallas, doing a good job, but, you know, it's pretty clear that Dallas doesn't think they're in it right now to either make the playoffs or, even if they do make the playoffs, go on a playoff run. So he's a guy that can still offer you a lot. Jaromir Jagr, unlike Wade Redden, I don't think Wade Redden's going to get in the lineup much, to be honest with you, if at all. But Jaromir Jagr is a guy that can still give you power play minutes. He can still put the puck in the net. So it's a good move. And as far as, you know, maybe being a better fit than Iggy, I think Iginla is a better player at this stage of his career. I think you guys would agree with that. Yeah. But it might have been a better fit, you know, considering, you know, that they got a guy, you know, for not that much.
And you know what? Boston's system is a system that puts the puck below the hash marks and plays off the cycle. And it's not as maybe up-tempo as some other systems. And that fits Jagr's game perfectly.
Right, because he's impossible to get off the puck when he's got it
and
on
the
stick.
And he's not a great skater anymore.
Right. Also, the Bruins acquired Wade Redden for a conditional seventh-round pick.
Depth on defense for the stretch run.
Yeah. Sure, and you know he's certainly familiar with Zdeno Chara.
And Peter Chiarelli, the GM, was the former assistant GM in Ottawa.
That's exactly right. Montreal, before we get to the move that they made this, I believe it was yesterday or 2 days ago, Brendan Gallagher just took a shot right off the ankle, hobbled off the ice in the game against Philadelphia, didn't put any weight whatsoever on the ankle.
I really like Brendan Gallagher. Oh, yeah. He's been great this year. His name should be in the Calder Trophy discussion.
Yeah. We'll see, don't know anything about it, but he went straight to the dressing room. So, you can keep an eye on that. The Canadiens acquire a defenseman, Davis Drewski, from the Los Angeles Kings in exchange for a 2013 fifth-round pick. Five, six guy?
Yeah, five, six, seven guy. And the depth on the back end, the Canadiens have depth really everywhere. You know,
yep.
On forward, they're deep. On defense, they're deep. So I like the move. Doesn't cost you much. And if you want to make a run, and the Habs right now, if they stay second seed, are set up to possibly meet Pittsburgh or Boston in the conference final. You need defensemen. The playoffs are a war of attrition.
And our boy Jim Fox of Fox Sports West mentioned this, covers the LA Kings there and is a good friend of the show. Davis Drewski was a healthy scratch. Mm-hmm. So it's not like the LA Kings weren't willing to give him up. And that's a similar kind of move. In the sense of being a depth guy that, Boston, compared to what Boston did by acquiring Wade Redden. But Davis Drewski is a guy that he's not overly physical. He's not the most talented offensive guy. But, I look at Richie, you mentioned the defense and their strengths. Guys like Rafael Diaz and Alexei Emelin and Yannick Weber, they've really surprised me. And,
never mind Subban and Markov.
Exactly. So, this is just making a really good defense even better.
Ottawa's move, we spoke about it earlier, acquiring Corey Conacher at a fourth-round pick in exchange for Ben Bishop. How does Corey Conacher fit into the Senators' lineup this year and, of course, going forward?
Well, he's got good hands, he's got pretty good hockey sense, and he can skate. And the Senators want somebody who can skate, and he's young, he's 23, fits in well.
I think he wears 89. He reminds me a lot, he almost reminds me of a more mobile Mike Comrie, one of those guys that's 5'9" and all that. But he was the top scorer in the AHL last year. Not an easy league to lead scoring in, and he was on fire with Tampa Bay and cooled down. But I just love that move because Spezza, we don't know when he's coming back. They could use all the offense they can get because right now it's tough to believe this guy's, but a lot of their scoring is coming from Jacob Silverberg. It's coming from Mika Zibanejad. In addition to who you'd expect it to be coming from, Kyle Turris. So, pretty smart move by Brian Murray. He's got three goalies. Everyone knew he was going to trade one of them eventually, right? So you get a guy that's got high offensive upside and it's pretty young. It's a pretty good deal.
This isn't trade deadline related, but I wasn't obviously at Saturday's show. Have we made fun of Eugene Melnyk for hiring a forensic investigator to prove that Matt Cook deliberately stepped on Erik Karlsson?
We haven't talked about that yet, but we
didn't
have
even
hired
a
forensic...
Investigator
to investigate who ate the last donut in the studio.
Well, I think both Ezzy and I can attest to the fact that it was you, my friend.
Richie ate too, but he's been here since 11:30 in the morning, so I think we'll forgive him.
Exactly. Before we go to break, the Toronto Maple Leafs acquired Ryan O'Byrne. He's a defenseman. They got him from Colorado for a fourth-round pick in 2014. More so than that, I want to talk about the fact that they didn't trade for Roberto Luongo. You can cover both of those quickly as we're up against it.
Contracts through 2022. $5.3 million cap it. That's why, although they were talking about him.
I had no idea O'Byrne was making that much money.
In terms of O'Byrne, Drew, he's a right-handed guy. He's a big defenseman. He'll kill penalties, do all that stuff. Is he kind of in the same mold as a Corbinian Holzer? Sure, but he's more mobile. He's a mean defenseman on a Toronto team that can't get enough mean players on the back end. He's a little bit of an upgrade on those guys, too, and he's a pending UFA. So I have no issue with the move.
Pugnacity. I thought, if you listened to our show on Saturday, we did our trade deadline preview show. I thought the Jets should go after O'Byrne. I like O'Byrne a lot, and I think that's a good move for the Leafs. I've actually liked a lot of the moves the Leafs have made over the last year, not so much the last 10 years. But quickly, the Leafs not going after Luongo, I just don't think they were willing to give up, a Tyler Bozak and draft picks. And I actually think the Leafs were... well served. They wanted Kiprusoff. They couldn't get him. They wanted Kiprusoff, not Luongo, and it's pretty clear he didn't want to go anywhere.
1 hour down, 1 hour to go. We move over to the Western Conference. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290. You can take this one, Richie.
Hey, don't freak out, Richie. Seattle, we're not playing this because Seattle's in the Central Division.
Remus, why is this Central Division?
Oh, I thought we were doing Pacific. We're not?
Wow. No, we're not. Central Division. You can get, wow. You can get the bumper ready.
Michael Remus just broke the news. Seattle's getting an NHL team.
This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, conveniently located at 1700 Cordon Avenue in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli that has been serving traditional deli food for nearly 30 years. Take it home or eat it there. Bernstein's Deli is your deli destination in Winnipeg. Check out their website at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Good eats. I was there twice this weekend. I actually took someone to Bernstein's on Sunday that had never been there. They really enjoyed it. They got to know, you know, everything about the deli culture.
That's funny. I actually sent a co-worker came up to me yesterday and said, you know, where can I get a really good bowl of soup?
Oh.
I said, Bernstein's Deli.
Mm-hmm. Best cabbage borscht in the city.
He called me absolutely. This morning, said, you are 100% right. I was under the weather. He had the sniffles, or his partner had the sniffles. And he said, we had the chicken soup and the matzo balls, and they were terrific.
Drew's not a doctor, Richie, but he'll take a look.
Remus,
it's a real good operation you're running back there.
Central Division is the
Central
bumper.
Division.
Wouldn't it be NHL Midweek if we didn't get to throw you under the bus multiple times?
Well, he deserves it today.
Let's start in Columbus. They were the busiest of the teams in the Central Division. Well, you know what? You look at the teams in the Central Division, with the exception of Detroit, who did nothing. Everybody was busy there. Columbus acquiring Marian Gaborik in exchange for Derek Dorsett, John Moore, Derek Brassard, and a sixth-round pick. They also acquired Blake Como from the Calgary Flames in exchange for a fifth-round pick, and they acquired Michael Layton and a third-round pick for Steve Mason. Hmm? You know, is it just me, or is the future very, very bright for the Columbus Blue Jackets? And they might be a playoff team this year, but they've really set themselves up well for the next 5 years.
I think they have, Richie, and, you know, I probably wouldn't have told you that Columbus was the team that was going to go after and get Marian Gaborik, especially a month ago when they were last place in the Western Conference. But lo and behold, they're in eighth place in the Western Conference right now, I believe, unless it's changed, because it seems to change every 2 seconds. But, you know, now they've got Marian Gaborik, and, you know, there's somebody to play with Vaclav Prospel. And they gave up Derek Brassard, who was pretty good for them this year and has been only with them, you know, in his short career. And he's, you know, kind of struggled to develop with a lack of talent there in Columbus. But, you know, I look at Prospel and Gaborik, a couple of guys that, you know, have a bit of a history together, and you'd have to think that, you know, he's the type of guy that could probably benefit and give them a little boost here.
You know, you look at the context of it, and Columbus, you know, some people say, oh, why is Columbus trading for him? They have a tough chance of making the playoffs. Well, first off, it's not only for this season, but it's for next season. It changes the culture in Columbus into one that wants to win. You have a player going there who wants to go there, unlike in the past. You know, they talk also about trading the young players. Well, first off, Brassard to them was somewhat of a write-off, probably. Dorsett is a guy who adds certain elements in physicality and things like that, but he's replaceable. And then John Moore. You talk about the context. Well, think about Columbus. What's their strength? It's the back end.
Yep.
You know, Tootin and Jack Johnson and Nikita Nikitin and Tim Erickson.
Ryan Murray.
Exactly. Yep. So you're dealing from depth. It's like Minnesota. You deal from depth. We have prospects. We can deal prospects. At some point, you want to have prospects and you want to win now. And Columbus, it's a bold move. And I like the move. And if it doesn't work out, well, hey, Gabrick's off the books next year. I don't think any of those players they traded are completely, you know, are not replaceable. And you can make a run this year. And, you know, Jarmo Kukkolainen, he's really been aggressive. JD's there. They have three first-round picks this year. They have LA's. They have their own. And they have the Rangers. They're lined up just fine.
Richie, you mentioned Jarmo Kukkolainen. We had Aaron Portsline on last week on Midweek. We were kind of, you know, talking to Aaron about, you know, Jarmo Kekalainen. He hasn't made a big move yet. Well, he just made it, and now he looks pretty good there in Columbus. They've just added Marian Gaborik, and you've got, like Richie mentioned, a lot of young, talented defensemen. Jack Johnson has quietly had an unbelievable season in Columbus, and Bobrovsky was, you know, player of the month. It's just a good story there, and it's one of those moves. You know, Richie mentioned, you know, they're trading from a position of strength. Mm-hmm. when you consider that, they didn't get give up a lot to get Gaborik.
And you think also about what their need is. Their need scoring. Who's their leading scorer? Vaclav Prospel, who apparently was convinced, talked to Gaborik, or was talking
about
the city being a desirable place to be. They address a scoring need too. To me, I like the deal for Columbus.
Can you imagine if you had said,
I know.
A year ago at this time, Marian Gaborik would waive his no-trade clause.
5 days ago.
Columbus Blue Jackets.
This wasn't a trade, Drew, but we should mention, too, Mark Letestu, former Pittsburgh Penguin, signed a two-year deal yesterday. He's a guy that's been giving them offense along with Vaclav Prospel. You look at the team, R.J. Umberger, guys like that, that's who's been scoring for the team. I mean, let's not get too ahead of ourselves. One of the major reasons why Columbus is even in the playoff discussion right now is because of the play of Bobrovsky. If you ask anybody, he's been stealing a lot of games. But having said that, you pick up Gaborik now, all of a sudden you've got a bit of an offensive boost.
Yeah. It's still a bit of a struggle for them to make the playoffs this year, but the future is a lot brighter than it was not that many months ago. It really does go to show you the influence and the impact that John Davidson can have on a team. You bring him in, and it's almost like an immediate turnaround.
And for Mason, they add Como. Sure, he can add a little bit of offense and things like that, but as you mentioned, you re-sign Letestu. What about Mason? You'd have to qualify him next year at 2.9. You don't have to worry about that now. Now you have Layton, who's probably the same goaltender, who's a pending UFA, who comes off the books, and you get a third-round pick.
Off the top of my head, I can't remember who it is, but I believe the Jackets, maybe Remo can look it up if he's not mad at me right now. I believe they have a pretty good goaltending prospect, a European goaltending prospect in the system. His name isn't coming to my mind right now, but I believe they do have a pretty good goaltending prospect that maybe can make the NHL as early as next year. I'd have to look that up.
Alan York?
No.
I don't think he's a prospect. Yeah.
The point being that I think Bobrovsky is going to be part of their future going forward. Oh, I think Remo's...
They have 2012 second-round pick Oscar Dansk.
There you go. That's the guy. Oscar Dansk is the guy I was thinking of, played in the World Junior Tournament, and they're pretty high on him. He's a top prospect in their system. So when you factor that in, the Blue Jackets are not only could they make the playoffs this year, they might be a playoff team for the next few years.
Yeah, good for the Blue Jackets. St. Louis Blues, obviously they had high hopes at the beginning of this year. They decided to shore up the back end. They acquired Jay Bouwmeester from the Calgary Flames. Again, this happened a few days ago. Yep. They acquired Jordan Leopold from the Buffalo Sabres. And they acquired a conditional 7th-round pick for Wade Redden, so you can forget about that one. Bouwmeester and Leopold, how does that solidify their back end? Even though they're not one of the upper echelon Western Conference teams, do they have the horses now to perhaps make the playoffs and make a run?
As weak as the East is, the West is strong, and that's the thing. And you look at, I think it was on this show weeks ago, we said on our 6 things we learned this week that the Blues need to add a left side second pairing top 4 defenseman. And they've added one in Bouwmeester. Leopold isn't that anymore, if he ever was. This move's great. It addresses a need. You have now your top 4. You have Jackman to add a physicality. You have Shattenkirk and Pietrangelo, who are both pending RFAs. You add Bouwmeester for this year and next on the cap. Big money, but on the cap. You add Leopold. You have Roman Polak, who's been doing a great job in terms of physicality and doing what he needs to do. You have Chris Russell there now. You can throw in and out with Leopold, however you want to do it. You have a pretty deep forward class. You have some kind of issues in goal with the Halak injury and who's going to play. But you're a team nobody wants to play now because you've shored up your biggest weakness. And you're playing against Ken Hitchcock. So have fun in the West when you get first seed and you could be playing the St. Louis Blues, or you could be playing the St. Louis Blues as a second seed or the third seed even.
Doug Armstrong did very well here, Richie. Mm-hmm. Going after Jay Bouwmeester, they needed, as you said, a left-side defenseman. They needed a replacement for Redden. He wasn't quite working out in St. Louis. You talk about the Eastern Conference and the Rangers sneaking into the 7th or 8th spot and playing Boston or Pittsburgh. Well, what about the St. Louis Blues, who Eric Duhatchik on this show of the Globe and Mail picked as the Stanley Cup winner? Well, what if they finish 8th and they play Chicago? Mm-hmm. Think Chicago wants to play the St. Louis Blues in the first round? I don't think so. Good goaltending. Jake Allen was a guy that, can come in and he's proven that he can, win games. So, they won the Jay Bouwmeester sweepstakes. I think we might look back. I'm getting ahead of myself, but we might look back on, the trade deadline, and a lot of these teams won't make the playoffs or will get knocked out in the first round. But we might look back on this and say, well, what guy really made you know, a struggling team really good? And Jay Bouwmeester might be one of those guys, similar to an Edmonton back in the day with Chris Pronger, 06.
Blues are eighth in the Western Conference with 38 points right now, tied with Nashville, but they do have games in hand on all the teams ahead of them. They have two games in hand on Detroit and a game in hand on San Jose. And so, you know, they, if they can sneak in, like you said, they're a dangerous team. Quick aside, nothing to do with the Central Division, but Ryan Clough just scored for the New York Rangers.
Have fun in the division next year, Jets.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Have fun in the division next year. Going to Nashville, they acquired Philippe Forsberg in exchange for Martin Irat and Michael Latta. You know, is this, I mean, Nashville's not going anywhere this year, and they got a good, very good young player, a guy that was a top 10 pick just a year ago.
Yeah, and I was a little bit surprised that Nashville made that move. And I'm not sure I like the move, considering that Nashville is fighting the likes of the St. Louis Blues for a playoff spot right now in the Western Conference. But, you know, Philip Forsberg is a guy that should get Predators fans excited, you know, looking ahead in the future, because Philip Forsberg is a guy that has loads of offensive upside. And we don't know if he's going to be a first liner, but, you know, a lot of the scouts think he can be. So you give up a guy, in the short term who has 3 years left on his contract, for kind of an eye towards the future.
I like the move. I like the move a lot for David Poile. He's making the move, I think, at the right time. They need to get more offensive talent through the pipeline. Forsberg is a top 10 pick. I believe it's top 10 pick, or close, 11th maybe.
Yeah.
And
he might have fallen out of the top 10.
I think he was 11th, but, you know, he's a guy with good talent. Some people have mixed reviews on him, but I don't think people who even don't like him don't think he's going to be an NHL player. So I think Erat, they knew what they had in Erat. He had given them a lot over the course of his career there. But I think they made the right decision to cut ties at this time.
And, I mean, Erat wanted out. He had requested the deal. They kept that silent. Nobody had heard a word that he requested the trade a couple weeks ago.
And you know what? That's good on both ends. Good for the agent and Erat for not going public, and good for Poile, obviously, for not going public.
And, yeah, David Poile makes his trade, and he improves his team. I mean, he's a very astute general manager right there. Quickly, Michael Hanzus goes to Chicago for a fourth-round pick in 2013. Just a depth player for the Blackhawks?
Well, we talked about it on Saturday's show. What do the Blackhawks need? Maybe a sixth defenseman, five, six, seven defenseman. They didn't add that. That's fine. What was the other need we pointed out? Face-off specialist, fourth line kind of center. Yep. And that's exactly what Hanzus is. I think his winning draw is above 53 or 54%. And, you know, he can play against other teams, you know, solid players. He also he's not a great skater, but he's big. And so he can take draws and take the man off the draw. And he's the kind of player winning teams who are going on a long run need to add that depth. And I like the move.
Yeah, you've got Taves, Boland, you know, 1-2. I think they were using Andrew Shaw, but as a centerman on the third line with Victor Stahlberg there and Marcus Kruger. But yeah, Richie, you were right. You know, that's exactly what it is. It's a guy, and a guy that's got playoff experience. He's, you know, in his mid-30s at this point in his career. Wasn't doing much in San Jose, so good move.
And finally, the Detroit Red Wings make no moves at all. How surprised are you about that?
You know, Drew, they have some pending free agents. You know, Brendan Smith is a pending RFA for them, and Kindle's a pending RFA, and Philpool has a pending UFA, and there's some other pending UFAs. But I think Kenny Holland sees the big picture. Kenny Holland says, you know, if we can do something this year, that'll be surprising to us. But we're not going to mortgage the future, and we're also not going to throw the towel in. We have some young players and Nyquist and other guys that they have in the system, and Thomas Tatar and such. Just ride it out, and I expect them to be active in free agency and trading at the draft. But he didn't see it, you know, the time. He didn't think the time was right, and I tend to agree with him.
Yeah. Right. The Detroit Red Wings aren't a Stanley Cup contender this year.
No, and they wanted Bouwmeester. Let's be clear about that. If you know, for those listening who didn't know that, because they definitely wanted Jay Bouwmeester. They coveted him, but like Richie said, they didn't want to give up the first rounder and, you know, maybe two prospects, maybe one prospect. And the way they draft Richie, that's probably a good idea.
And you're not going to sell because you still can make a run. They certainly can make a run. Will they make a run? Unlikely, but they can. They have the ability to do that.
Right, but you're not to mortgage the future to acquire one piece at this point. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to go to the Northwest Division. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290. Back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. We're going division by division, team by team, breaking down the 2013 NHL trade deadline, which came to a head about 5 hours ago. We'll continue with the Northwest Division.
Northwest Division.
The Northwest Division probably have to start with the Minnesota Wild. They made the biggest splash today in acquiring Jason Pominville and a 2014 fourth round pick in exchange for a number of prospects and draft picks, Matt Hackett and Johan Larsson, 2013 first round pick, 2014 second round pick. How does Pominville slot into their lineup, and does this improve the ceiling for the Minnesota Wild as they enter into the playoffs this coming, at the end of this month?
Absolutely. They're fighting with the Vancouver Canucks right now for that Northwest Division lead, and they've been playing a lot better as of late, over the last month in March. But you're getting Jason Pominville, someone who has been just so consistent year after year with the Buffalo Sabres, and you're already strong on the wings, and now you've added someone who is capable of scoring at will on the wings as well. And I don't want to overstate this, but, you know, Jason Pominville is a pretty good player. You've already got Zach Parise on the wing there. You've already got Danny Heatley. And, you know, I thought that maybe the Minnesota Wild would go after a second-line center. You've got Matt Cullen, who's kind of been forced into that second center role. You've got, obviously, Mikko Koivu as the top-line center there with Parise. But you've added Jason Pominville, and that's what Minnesota needed, Richie. They needed more scoring. And, you know, to be honest with you, they're not the strongest on defense after Ryan Suter. You know, you've got guys like Clayton Stoner who leave a little bit to be desired playing big-time minutes on Minnesota. But Suter plays half of the game, so he makes up for that a little bit, and you're strong in net as well. But this makes them a lot better, definitely, Drew.
You know, we talked about their needs on Saturday as kind of a veteran defenseman and a two-way defenseman and a veteran right, a veteran winger. And they've added exactly that. And I think they've added a kind of guy that they need. You know, you look at their top six now, and you have Parise, and you have Koivu, and you have Pominville now, and Bouchard's been solid. Devin Setoguchi adds speed. You know, Cullen and Heatley, you're talking top nine, really. Kyle Brodziak, who they kind of use, you know, can really do a lot of things for you. As you mentioned, you know, their back end, they could probably use another guy there, but this is a team that has a mix of youth, and, you know, you don't want to play guys like Charlie Coyle down the stretch in the top six role when you can add in a guy like Pominville who can play the point, who can shoot, who can do a lot of things for you.
Who's been through the wars.
Through the wars. It's a move that I think makes a lot of sense. Again, they have depth in their system. They can trade out some prospects who aren't their top prospects, who are good but aren't their top prospects. Trade out picks because you have a bunch in the system. And add a player who you have now and for next year and maybe past that. Minnesota's well coached, and they're a dangerous team. Again, we get back to the fact that the Western Conference is going to be a war this year, and Minnesota is going to be one of those teams partaking in it.
Pominville under contract next year as well at a salary of $5.3 million, but cap space shouldn't be a problem for the Wild at this point in time, but we'll have to see about that. The team they are battling with for the Northwest Division lead is the Vancouver Canucks. The Vancouver Canucks acquired Derek Roy from the Dallas Stars in exchange for Kevin Connaughton and a second-round pick in this upcoming draft. Does Derek Roy solve their problems up the middle?
I think it does, and Derek Roy in Dallas lasted about 4 minutes. But, you know, that's exactly what they needed. Richie mentioned that on the show, that he thought Derek Roy would be a perfect fit in Vancouver, and it turns out he was right. You know, they have to replace Ryan Kesler, and it's not clear when Ryan Kesler's coming back. If he does come back for the playoffs, well, then you've got the option of having three really good centers. So it's a very good move. And, you know, the Vancouver Canucks, we've talked about this quite a bit on this show, have tried guys like Andrew Ebbett and have tried guys like Zach Cassian and so on and so forth, and they haven't been able to really solidify the second line. Ryan Kesler out of the Vancouver Canucks lineup, is a scary thing for them, and that's why they went out and they got Derek Roy. And, you know, Kevin Connaughton, you know, spent a little bit of time with the Manitoba Moose, and he was kind of a lower top prospect for them, Richie. Nicholas Jensen is a guy that's a higher prospect for them, and then there's also other guys that were ahead of Kevin Connaughton on their prospect list. So what they give up is not that bad for Derek Roy. And, you know, I don't think he's going to necessarily, you know, score two goals every game, but I think he's definitely going to be an upgrade. They also signed Chris Higgins for 4 years. So they've done a nice job there of adding some secondary scoring.
Who are the guys? I mean, Sedin and Jensen's their last game. Hansen with Burrows and Higgins, Schrader with Sweat and LaPierre, Sestito with Pinizotto and Ebbett. Who are these guys?
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest here. And the Canucks haven't drafted well. We pointed that out. Their defense is great.
Jordan Schrader was sent back down to the AHL.
Yeah, and so what Derek Roy does in conjunction with the return of other players, but most importantly Ryan Kessler when he returns, is he provides depth. Are they going to play Roy on the wing with Kessler? They might. Are they going to play those three as centers? Kessler, Roy, and Sedin, Kessler, and Roy, kind of like Sedin, Kessler, and Harsin. They may do that as well. They have options. I like Derek Roy. He can skate. He can play the point. He can pass. He can score a bit. He's a good offensive mind. He has good offense. He has good hockey sense. I like the addition. I thought it made a lot of sense. And if they had only dealt with the Roberto Luongo situation at some point in the past 10 months, I'd feel a heck of a lot better about Vancouver.
Moving on to Calgary, where they traded Jay Bouwmeester in exchange for a conditional first-round pick. It'll either be this year or next year, depending on how St. Louis fares this season. Mark Kundari and Rito Barra. They also traded Blake Como for a fifth-round pick. Yeah. Those deals have been analyzed pretty much ad nauseum. Should the Flames have traded more players from their roster? Should they have traded a Mike Camilleri or a Curtis Glencross to really bottom out and start a complete and total rebuild?
Jay Feaster in the presser today said his only untouchables were Barchi, Giordano, Glencross, and I'm forgetting the other player that he mentioned, but it was four players. Camilleri wasn't.
I didn't even realize it was that many, Richie.
Camilleri wasn't one of them. To me, Glencross at 2.55 a year for this year and the next two would have got you a lot. He can do everything. I really like Curtis Glencross's game. Maybe that's why they want to keep him through this transition period. Overall, surprised they didn't do more, and I realize the players that they have on the team are no movement or no trade clauses, and they can restrict where they're going. But a guy like Mike Camilleri, a little bit surprised he went. The Calgary situation's just a mess. I mean, we'd be mincing words if we didn't say anything other than this is a mess. There didn't seem to be direction. They seemed reticent to finally rebuild. And when they rebuilt, they kind of did a partial rebuild right now by trading Bouwmeester and by trading Iginla and by arguably not getting enough for either of them.
The problem is, if you look at Calgary and you look at their cap situation, they have a lot of players that are still under contract for big dollars for a lot of years.
Yuri Hudler, Dennis Wiedemann, who haven't been living up to
Alex
those.
Tange. Yep. I mean, these guys are all under contract.
Tange and Glencross are, to me, affordable contracts and should be players that teams want.
Well, I mean, but do you want Tange at $3.5 million up until 2015, 2016?
You may not, but if you're a team that needs a really good passing player who can play the power play and can skate, and skills probably won't erode as much as maybe a scorer, I don't have an issue with that. There's no direction, though. I mean, you don't rebuild. It's like the Edmonton Oilers before with Steve Tambellini. You don't hire Pat Quinn and sign Nikolai Habibulin if you're wanting to rebuild. You don't sign Dennis Wiedemann and sign Yuri Hudler to big money contracts if you're intending to rebuild.
I think what Richie's getting at here is it's pretty obvious. When they traded Jerome Iginla, first and foremost, they already started the rebuild. Then you throw in Jay Bouwmeester, Blake Como. Yeah, you could have traded Kiprusoff, but he didn't want to move because of his family reasons in Calgary.
But he's going to be off the books by the sounds of it.
One more year, come next year.
Or he's going to retire this offseason by the sounds of it. So
he's nearing the end of his career. Yeah. But yeah, Drew, you touched on it. Glencross, they decided, okay, we want to keep a couple of guys around with the youngsters. Michael Backlund, Sven Barchi, those are kind of the future guys of your team. So, I mean, next year you have to think the Flames aren't going to be very good, and those are guys, again, we're going to be talking about next year
as far as guys that they should trade. They're going to be last in the NHL bad because they still have these guys under contract that have some talent.
They're last in the NHL bad right now, aren't they?
I don't know.
Close to it.
They are, they're in third last place, but you look at their team, and the guys are under contract, and they're getting, but these are, guys that you would consider
right, but you've still taken away, you've still taken away your best defenseman in Jay Bouwmeester, and you've taken away your best forward in Jerome Iginla. I know what you're saying. You've still got Camilleri, Tange, Glencross, and all these guys, but you're still pretty bad.
Two things. As per Elliot Friedman's Twitter, the other player, it was Berchi, Glencross, Giordano, and TJ Brody was the other one. I guess we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about Luongo's press conference, though, Drew. Forgot about that.
Yeah, Luongo's press conference I thought it was a fabulous press conference. I mean, you'd never see a player be that honest. I thought he handled it with typical aplomb. I mean,
how many guys could handle what Roberto Luongo has gone through the last 2 years?
Not
many guys.
Very few. And handled it as, I mean, he's made so many friends, not around the NHL. He's garnered so much respect around the NHL for the manner in which he's gone about his business in the last, like you said, 24 months.
For people who missed it, he said that he'd scrap his contract if he could, and his contract, I believe, sucks was one of the other ones.
Yeah,
and
my contract sucks.
But Richie, Luongo's been on a plank for 2 years, just waiting.
I mean, never mind the fact that you need to trade him regardless of what you get for him to get rid of his contract. The other factor is this. You're the Canucks. To me, their window is closing, but it's not yet closed. This is the more important part. Second game of the playoffs. Schneider lets in 2 bad goals. What does the crowd want? Because the crowd changes every 5 minutes.
Especially in Vancouver, where they're not easy on goaltenders.
What does the crowd want? They want Luongo. What does that do to Schneider's confidence? It's just been mismanaged.
Drew, they're not easy on losing game sevens either.
Well, you know, very true. I mean, you know what? I think from the start, the move probably was to deal Schneider.
No.
It's probably a little bit... We're too far down the road at that point in time, but the move was probably to deal Schneider.
Or limit your... Or lessen your expectations on a return for a guy who signed for 9 or 10 more years at 5.3 a year, whatever it is.
Last two teams in the Northwest, Vancouver, Edmonton, they acquired Jared Smithson, good faceoff guy. And Colorado traded away Ryan O'Byrne, and they got a 4th-round pick in 2014.
As George Richards of the Miami Herald said early in the day, Jared Smithson is trending in Canada. Canada needs to get a life.
Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, the Pacific Division. Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Remus gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve.
That's Timmy's thing, Drew.
Timmy's thing. I realized I screwed it up halfway through. I figured I'd go, you know, I was already down the road, so I figured I'd go with it.
He's on loan from Rick Ralph.
That's right. Remus is truly on loan from Rick Ralph in the TSN 1290 roundtable.
Drew, you better be careful. Richie's been in studio for 9 hours now. He's pretty sharp.
He's getting punchy also. I can see that. That's okay. We'll get him a beer in about 25 or so minutes. He can undo his tie and loosen up a little bit. Let's continue on division by division, team by team.
Pacific Division.
Pacific Division. Let's start with the Dallas Stars. They were probably had some of the more impactful moves in that when they decided to trade Jaromir Jagr and Derek Roy. In exchange for Derek Roy, they got Kevin Connaughton and a second-round pick in 2013. In exchange for Jaromir Jagr, they got Lane McDermott, Cody Payne, and a conditional second-round pick in 2013. Dallas Stars, they're building from the back end out. Is that pretty safe to say at this point?
I think now they are. I mean, I do like the move of Brendan Morrow for Joe Morrow. I thought they did really well on that one.
Right. I didn't mention that one. You guys have already discussed it while I was away, of course.
We have, yes. I guess when you look at the trade deadline, try to include everything. And I think that was a nice move for them. I think in terms of Derek Roy, I don't know a lot about Kevin Connaughton, but, you know, they trade Roy, and if you're not going to re-sign him, you get a second-round pick and you get a prospect for him. And then in terms of Jagr, you get a pick and a couple prospects for him as well. Remember that Jagr's a guy they just signed for a year, so they've essentially got those prospects for, you know, 35 games or whatever of Jaromir Jagr. And Roy, if you weren't going to re-sign him, and apparently he's asking for around $6 million.
Yep.
And you wonder if he's actually asking for $6 million or he's asking for $6 million so he can get traded.
So because he wants out of Dallas.
One of the two, and apparently him and Glenn Gulson didn't get along. So that also needs to be noted. But if you're Dallas, you know, you need to know what you are. And I think by making these moves, they've admitted what they are, rightfully so, and I'm supportive of them.
Right, and doesn't that speak to Joe Nieuwendyk and Frank Provenzano, who we've had on this show twice? They addressed a big need, and they realized that they're a little bit away from being a good playoff team. We talked about the defense, and you look at the defense, and Brendan Dillon has kind of emerged as a future guy on their team. Uh-huh. But they've used a lot of other guys that probably shouldn't be in the NHL right now. And, you know, Kevin Connaughton, as I mentioned earlier on the show, he's a guy that played a little bit for the Moose. He was in the Vancouver Canucks system, obviously, and is more of a kind of a 3-5 defenseman, I would say. Not a guy that's probably going to be a number one or two shutdown defenseman or offensive defenseman. But, you know, they're stockpiling the system. It's funny how, you know, Derek Roy and Jaromir Jagr in the offseason were their big moves, but they've decided that, you know what, those moves that we made aren't really serving the needs that we set out to accomplish in the first place. So might as well get something for those guys instead of losing them for nothing.
Well, you know, and I don't have a problem with it. You know, they may have thought their development was further ahead than it truly was, but when you sign guys to one-year contracts,
right.
I mean, we've said it on this show and on Saturday's show more than once, is there's really no such thing as a bad one-year deal because you can get out of it very easily. And so what have they done? They've replenished or they've restocked some of their farm system. They've got they've acquired a couple draft picks, and what it cost them, it just cost them money.
Yeah, and you look
at them money over the course of the year.
A guy that Remus will remember was a 2011 draft. They've had Jamie Oleksiak in the lineup. They're really you're really stretching your lineup there, and that's what Jets fans should be cautious about with Jacob Trouba. You know, to put a guy who's 18, 19 years old in the lineup, even for 10 or 12 minutes, it's asking a lot for a guy, and you know that other teams, Richie, are going to try to capitalize on. When you see a guy who's new to the NHL, sure, he might be a top prospect, but if you're the Boston Bruins or the Chicago Blackhawks, you're going to try to exploit that guy. You're going to try to push him around, get him off his game, and the Dallas Stars right now need to stockpile, especially their decor. I think on forward, they brought in Cody Eakin, and I really like him. I think there's a lot to look forward to there. Jamie Benn's under a new contract. I think, I wouldn't be surprised, Kari Lehtinen's under contract. I think the Stars will be able to turn their fortunes around and get back into the playoffs as early as next year.
San Jose Sharks were also very busy when they traded Ryan Kloh, Michael Hanzus, and a third-round pick in 2013. When they traded those guys away, they acquired a second-round pick, a third-round pick, a conditional second-round pick in 2014, a fourth-round pick in 2013. They acquired Rafi Torres, and they acquired Scott Hannon. Seems like a good mix of guys who can help them a little bit this year and a lot of draft picks that can help them to restock their cupboard as the team gets a little bit longer in the tooth.
And they did kind of like what I would have liked to see Kevin Sheldayoff do, trade the assets, get something for him, and then trade lesser assets for maybe lesser players, but not that big of a drop-off. Doug Murray as well, obviously the earlier trade we talked about on last week's show, getting two second-round picks for Doug Murray is a nice move. The only problem with Doug Wilson here is he's hung on to this group too long. Let's be honest. I don't think anybody thinks Craig Button was on our show on Saturday saying, this team's not going to win. They have to go for it. They're not going to win. And he's held on too long, and these moves don't really help him now. And what's he going to do in the summer? So in a window, I like these moves. In the big picture, I think Doug Wilson has that. We talked about the window. I said the window here twice. But this small window for these couple days, I like what he's. But the window for the Sharks to win the Cup
for this year or next year
is gone. Right. To me, it's gone. It's closed. And then the question in the summer is what to do in San Jose. Do you do a rebuild on the fly? Do you trade all of your big guys? Because their system isn't great, guys. And to me, they're not in the same class as they were before. So Doug Wilson's got a lot of work ahead of him. I like what he did here. But let's see if he can make the big decisions in the summer.
I don't know how much of a difference, it's not 2006, and that's when Scott Hannon and Rafi Torres were in their prime. And I don't know. Yeah, sure, it's going to make them tougher to play against. Everyone knows what Rafi Torres brings. He's going to bang skulls around and get suspended. And Scott Hannon is a defensive defenseman who, unfortunately, I really like him, but his best years are behind him. I'm not sure if this is really, what San Jose needs. I mentioned this on NHL Midweek. I believe it was 3 or 4 weeks ago. A guy like Havlat, sorry. Yeah. It's been a long day. Martin Havlat has just been awful this year, and they needed more scoring, and he's a guy that really was the key to that. Hasn't happened over the last 3 or 4 weeks, and San Jose continues to be kind of a middling team. And I don't know if this really does much, if anything. Even if they get in the playoffs, I don't think a team like Chicago or Anaheim is going to have much trouble with them.
Yeah, I mean, to me, you look at their roster, and it's a flawed roster. And it's not a trade or two away from being a complete one.
Moving on, the Los Angeles Kings, of course, the Stanley Cup champion, defending Stanley Cup champion Los Angeles Kings, acquired Robin Regier and a fifth-round pick in two separate deals. In exchange for Robin Regier, they gave up second-round picks in 2014 and 2015. And to acquire that fifth-round pick, they traded Davis Drewski.
Well, love the move. Because Robin Regier is familiar with Daryl Sutter, as obviously Daryl Sutter is familiar with Robin Regier. And he knows what he's getting. He's getting a tough defense, but not the best puck mover necessarily, or the best skater, but a guy who can block shots, who can hit, who can play the style of play that LA likes to employ. And I think Willie Mitchell out for the year, you needed a vet. We noted on Saturday's show, our trade deadline preview show, they needed a veteran defenseman. They've added one, they've added a quality one. He's going to fill in nicely on that back end. To me, this team is being overlooked right now. I think they're as good as any team in the National Hockey League. I don't see any team going through them easily. And I think Robin Regier only helps them try and repeat as Stanley Cup champions.
And Dean Lombardi is another one of those guys that just seems to know what he's doing. He goes out and he gets Keaton Ellerbe for, what, a fifth rounder, and he's been pretty good. And Davis Drewski, as we mentioned earlier when we were talking about the Pacific Division, is a guy that, or we are talking about the Pacific Division, I'm sorry, we were talking about the Northeast Division. He's a guy that was a healthy scratch, so they were willing to get rid of him, and Robin Regier is an upgrade over him. So he's done pretty well to make up for the injuries, and I believe there's a chance Matt Green will come back, but Scuderi's done.
Even if he doesn't come back, I mean, you look at their left side, and you have Scuderi, right?
Right.
Talk about Scuderi. You have Robin Regier. You have Drew Doughty, obviously, arguably the best defenseman in the National Hockey League. You have the always underrated Slava Voynov. People don't talk about him enough, but he's absolutely a top four defenseman to me. He plays on the right side there behind Doughty. Then you have the youngsters, and Jake Muzzin's been great. We've talked with him with Jim Fox of Fox Sports West. Alec Martinez is a good young defenseman. Keaton Ellerbe can fill in. Yeah, depth. Remember, teams that want to go far need depth on the back end. And as you mentioned, Mac Green, like the move.
The Anaheim Ducks, who are right up there at the top of the Western Conference, were more or less quiet. The moves that they made were small ones. They acquired Matthew Lombardi from the Phoenix Coyotes in exchange for Brandon McMillan, and they acquired Harry Zolnarczyk from the Philadelphia Flyers in exchange for Jay Rosehill. Zolnarczyk is going to join the AHL. Mm-hmm. I don't even know where their affiliate is. Is it Syracuse now? Yeah,
I believe it is Syracuse.
Okay, Syracuse, yeah. The AHL affiliate of the Anaheim Ducks. You know, you find with Anaheim more or less standing pat. On Saturday's show, you said that what they were looking for was a scoring winger and a fast defender.
Yeah, and you know, they add a player who can play the middle, so I think that's fine. You know, in reality, they probably want to have Koivu at 3 and Lombardi maybe kind of step into kind of the 3A or 2B center slot, so fine with that. It's a player who adds speed to their front end. He's not necessarily reliable in terms of his health, but he's only on a $2 million deal. He's a UFA after this year. They want to make a little bit of a run. I do have some worry about the back end in terms of its skating ability. And I realize Boschman can move around, and so can Fowler.
He's had an underrated season.
Absolutely. And so can Fowler, Spezza, and Lovejoy. I realize that. But guys, you know, like Surrey and Allen, I think if they get in a matchup with a team like LA, that's going to be fine because that matches up well. If you get into a matchup with a really good skating squad,
St. Louis.
Yeah, I think that you might have a little bit of issues, and I would have liked to maybe see a depth defender who can move, but it's not a make or break move. And I'm fine. If I'm a Ducks fan, I'm fine with the group I have, and you're adding a veteran presence.
The Phoenix Coyotes will wrap up the Pacific Division with them. The Phoenix Coyotes traded away Rafi Torres, Steve Sullivan, and Matthew Lombardi, three guys off of their roster. Mm-hmm. In exchange for those guys, they got a third-round pick in 2013, a seventh-round pick in 2013, and Brandon McMillan.
That says it right there, dude. Yeah. I mean, they're not going for it.
Are you surprised they held on to Mike Smith?
Not necessarily, because they didn't get Bishop, and apparently they were in on Ben Bishop. They'll see what they're going to do with Mike Smith in the offseason. They've certainly indicated in the past that they're willing to be patient and they're not afraid to make bold moves later on. So, you know, Don Maloney's never been one to look away from a tough decision, and I don't really, if I'm a Coyotes fan, and I think there's three of them, I wouldn't concern myself too much with this.
Yeah, I think they're 4 or 5 points out of a playoff spot, if not less than that. Yeah. So they're not completely out of it, but look at the teams ahead of them that they're competing with. Yeah. It's going to be tough for them to get in.
They're 2 points out of a playoff spot.
Yeah, there you
spot,
go.
But
only two.
But they're in 12th, so they have to leapfrog three teams in the Western Conference. So I would not expect the Phoenix Coyotes to be a playoff team this season.
Rangers are obliterating Pittsburgh right now.
Well, let's quickly, before we go to break, do a quick score update from around the NHL. In New York, the Pittsburgh Penguins jumped out to a 3-0 first period lead. They now lead 4-1 over the Pittsburgh Penguins. That's with about 17 minutes to go in the second period. In Philadelphia, a game that you can see on TSN, the Montreal Canadiens and the Philadelphia Flyers are tied up at one goal apiece. Sean Couturier just scored for the Flyers.
It's a must-win for Philly.
It was a shot that Price saved. The rebound deflected off of the Canadiens' own defenseman and passed him. So a bad goal, but the Flyers will take it nonetheless. Three games that are later tonight: Dallas at Anaheim, Edmonton at Calgary, and Minnesota at San Jose. Let's go to break. When we come back, one final segment, and we declare our winners and losers on today's NHL trade deadline day. You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. One final segment on NHL Midweek for this Wednesday evening. Sunday morning, 11:30 a.m. coverage starts. The Toronto Blue Jays live here on TSN 1290. Very pumped about that. Listen to the Jays if you're out and about on Sunday morning here on TSN 1290. They're going to be playing against the Boston Red Sox. So, I mean, we're watching the Jays game right now. We've got one TV on the Jays game, one TV on the Habs Flyers. Very pumped about the Jays here on TSN 1290.
And we're on at 8 a.m. on Saturday.
8 a.m. Saturday. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts Winnipeg Jets game day prior to the Jets Flyers 2 p.m. start time at MTS Center. I'm not expecting much from the Jets tomorrow in Montreal, even though the Habs are at the second half of a back-to-back. But I think it's safe to say the Saturday game is a must-win game for the Winnipeg Jets, especially given the tenor of the upcoming homestand and the playoff implications in and around that. Before we get to Saturday, of course, we have to wrap up Wednesday. Today was the NHL trade deadline, and as there are every year, you can't make rash judgments and be on the radio and not make rash judgments. So we have a segment, we call it Winners and Losers.
And now, Winners and Losers.
Ezzy, I'll start with you, and you know there's no real max on the number of teams. I'm going to open the floor up, so give me one team to start, winner or loser.
Okay, and we talked about this off air. We're not going to pick Pittsburgh because Pittsburgh was the big winner with Iggy.
Yeah,
and
we're looking
and
at the
Morrow.
Moves in the last, say, 3-4 days.
Right, and I'm going to start with today and Ottawa. They traded Ben Bishop to get Corey Conacher. I really like Corey Conacher. I believe he was born close to Ottawa, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, He gives you offense, and that's exactly what you needed. Ottawa has proven everybody wrong, and by sticking around without Spezza and without Carlson, and you know I really like that move. Another winner is the Columbus Blue Jackets. I didn't see Marian Gaborik being acquired.
Well, I was going to say one at a time, but finish your Blue Jackets one. That
Remus can confirm that Corey Conacher was born.
Yeah, he's born.
Keep going, Ezzy.
I thought he was an Ontario boy. I might be wrong about that.
I think you're right. Just as
I thought he was.
Joke.
Okay. You know, the Blue Jackets acquiring Gaborik and trading from a position of strength, which is defense, giving up John Moore, Derek Brassard, who I believe they were willing to give up. I really like that acquisition. I think the Columbus Blue Jackets, another team that had surprised everybody by sticking around in the playoff hunt. Now they've got Gaborik to play with Prosper. I really like that. So I'm going to say Columbus and Ottawa for sure are big winners for me.
You know, you can go
Corey Conacher's from Burlington, Ontario.
Yeah,
for
okay.
The
all right, see?
Over winners and losers. I think the winner's always perspective. You know, if you're the Sabres and had a bad season and you like the what they got for Pominville, are they a winner? I think a winner, to me, a clear winner is St. Louis Blues. I think they've acquired Bomeister and they've acquired Leopold. They've addressed a need on the back end. They've addressed in many ways, in that you take Bomeister, a guy who hasn't been to the playoffs before. I think you make the playoffs this year, but he's not your best defenseman. You can play behind Shattenkirk, play behind Pietrangelo, and while they may use his contract as benchmarks to a point, although different contractual situation, he complements them. He can do a lot of things. He can log a lot of minutes. You are a dangerous team, provided you get your goaltending figured out. I really like the moves by St. Louis. To me, I think St. Louis is a winner. I also think Boston's a winner. Forget Wade Redden. You acquire Jaromir Jagr. I think he's exactly what they need. I think he fits their system exactly right. I think he's a veteran. He may wear it down like he did in last year's playoffs, but it's a shorter season. He's going to be, they like to roll their lines pretty much, so he won't be relied on too much. He can help the power play. I think he's going to complement David Krejci. I think he'll play with instead of Nathan Horton. Depends on what they do with their lines, but I really do think Boston made a nice move there and didn't have to give up too much.
Ezzy, I'll turn it back for the flip side, the losers. Who's a loser today?
Ugh. I'm going to disappoint a lot of people. I'm not going to pick the Winnipeg Jets. I mean, it's tough to say who's a loser. I mean, is a team that doesn't make any moves, are they a loser? Well, you know, as far as the Detroit Red Wings go, you know, they might have only wanted one or two guys. I mean, on the flip side of my winner, I think one of the big losers would have to be the Tampa Bay Lightning. I think they waited too long to acquire a goaltender, and I think they gave up Corey Conacher, who I believe, you know, could have been a guy that stayed there for a long time, but obviously they don't like what they see in Anders Lindback and Matthew Garand. I'd have to say another loser is San Jose. I mean, San Jose, as Richie mentioned, the window's probably closed, and the San Jose Sharks went out and they got Rafi Torres and Scott Hannon and gave up Michael Hanzus, and they lost Ryan Clough to the New York Rangers, albeit they got the draft picks for Ryan Clough. But I think, you know, the San Jose Sharks really needed to address their secondary scoring issues, pardon me, and they didn't do that.
To me, the losers are in Western Canada. We'll start with Calgary, and it's a mess. They didn't trade all their players. They traded some of them. You mentioned, Drew, what are they really doing there? What about the compensation they got for the players that they got? And to me, it seems disorganized. I don't know what's going on there. Kiprasov wouldn't go. That's fine. He's got a no-move clause, and Jay Feaster has to respect that, whether or not, you know, it's not his choice, really, to respect that. But I have no issue with Kiprasov using that because he negotiated it in good faith. Vancouver. The Vancouver Canucks add Derek Roy, and I like the move a lot, and I like their defense a lot. And I think their forward group is good, but I don't think it's great. It doesn't mean that they can't win with it, but Roberto Luongo was sitting there on your bench. He frees up cap space if you're able to trade him, regardless of whether or not you get an asset for him, even if you get a middle-of-the-road asset for him, even nothing for him. I think his presence on the bench causes pressure for the squad, the whole squad, causes undue pressure on Corey Schneider, and it takes away the focus at times. And I think Mike Gillis has way overplayed his hand there, and for that I make him a loser.
It'll be interesting. I really think I like your point that you made earlier about when the Canucks are going to make the playoffs, and if Corey Schneider struggles, how quickly does that crowd in Vancouver, you know, begin to bubble up? Because I don't think it'll take much more than about, you know, the first goal let in by Corey Schneider before they're starting to chant for Luongo, and that'll be interesting. Quickly before we wrap up, the Winnipeg Jets, give me just winner or loser.
If they're more a loser to me than winner, because they didn't get rid of Hainsey, and Antropov's a little different story. But, I mean, not if I have to pick between winner, you know, if I have to categorize winners or losers,
yeah,
they're more loser than winner, but they're not really that big of a loser.
They're in the gray area?
You know, I would have preferred they do something other than what they did, but it's not major enough to be considered a loser.
Yeah, I'm going to cop out and not say winner or loser. I'm going to say that they were somewhere in the gray area. Wasn't overly ecstatic with what they did. I thought Santarelli getting him off waivers was a good move for Chevy, but I don't necessarily know that trading Hainsey for a third or fourth rounder was worth it. As I've said many times on the show, I think they need Hainsey down the stretch.
You talk about the prospects that the Jets have in the system. Every other team has prospects too. Nashville in their division next year, Philip Forsberg in the system. Dallas adding their prospects in the system, like Joe Morrow. Yeah. So you better watch.
What's unfortunate, though, Richie, you know, with Trouba signing, he might play here down the stretch, and Scheifele next year, is that their top prospects are going to be in the lineup next year.
By the way, they're a loser to me if they play six games of Jacob Trouba.
Well, we can talk about that on Saturday's program. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show will get underway at 8 a.m. on Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. That's it for this Wednesday and NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to Bernstein's Deli, sponsor of this fine program. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. For my colleagues, Richard Pollock, who's done yeoman's work today on this fine station. You can have a beer now, Richard. For Ezzie Ginsberg, who's already been drinking for some reason. And for producer Michael Remus on loan from Rick Ralph in the TSN 1290 Roundtable, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Thank you for listening. Saturday morning, 8 a.m. Until then, we wish you good night and good luck.
You've been listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve. Join us every Wednesday at 6 p.m. for your midweek NHL update. And join Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg Saturdays for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things NHL. TSN 1290. TSN 1290.ca.